Boy, what a rehearsal. Everything's gone wrong. There's too many hives in that joke. Can you take them out?
Wait a minute.
Yeah, how's this, Jeff? Any better? Not much. Now, I'll see if the sound man can do it.
All right.
Hey, Henry. You out there in the studio. Cut it. Come on, cut it. Hey, you got another record, Henry? This is supposed to be a 46-foot power cruiser. Sounds like an outboard putt-putt in the control room here.
What?
I said, do you have a new record?
I can't hear you. You're sitting in there in the control booth, and I'm out here in the studio. I can't hear you through the glass, Mr. Harmon. Have Joe raise the volume on the talkback, the loudspeaker, so I can hear you.
And boost the volume.
Good.
Now, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Well, have you got another record? It's supposed to be a cruiser, a big power cruiser. It sounds like an outboard putt-putt here.
Oh, I'll see what I can get, Mr. Harmon.
Yes.
Well, 15 seconds over on dress. Well, we'll pick that up easy enough. And Babs was dragging her speeches through the mud and run through.
Jeff.
Hmm?
Jeff, that tall gal, what's her name? The one playing Emma?
Oh, Jacqueline Ellerby. Well, what about her?
Now, she was peeking the VI every other line. Maybe you'd better back her away from the mic, okay?
Oh, okay. Hey, Jacqueline, honey. Jacqueline! Hey, is Ellerby in the studio there? Oh, there you are. Hey, darling. Now, you're in too close on that yacht club scene. Now, watch it, baby, will you?
Mr. Harmon, what's a VI?
What? Oh, Nick, I didn't see you there behind me. I forgot you were here in the control room with us. Sorry.
Well, that's all right.
What's a VI, huh? Well, a VI is... Joe, tell him what a VI is, will you?
Volume indicator, kid. You see this needle here in front of me?
That looks like a gasoline gauge in Dad's car, only it's bigger.
Well, if you look closer, you'll see it's marked off in volume units and percentages of modulation.
Yeah. Oh, put it in simple language, Joe. These engineers start talking, Nick. You need an interpreter more than half the time. Hey, look, I'm going in the studio for a couple of minutes. I've got to make some comments to the captain.
So the VI meter's marked off in volume units and percentages and what?
Well, the needle registers the intensity of the audio signal. In other words, every sound, voice, or music that's sent into the microphone from the studio is registered by this needle. Some sounds are too loud to go out. This needle shows when they are. And when they are, we cut down on the sound. Oh, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
We're going at this thing backward. That's what's the matter. Did Jeff tell you what makes a mic a mic?
Well, not exactly. Mr. Harmon's been pretty busy directing the show. It was swell of him to let me sit in and watch. I didn't want to bother him with a lot of questions.
But the idea is you're finding out about broadcasting, isn't it, Nick?
Sure.
Only way to find out about radio broadcasting isn't to pick up a lot of odds and ends of information and not know how they fit together. Look, have you ever seen a gun fired a long way away from you?
Yeah.
Well, you see the flash of the powder long before you hear the sound. You know why that is?
Well, I guess it's because...
Because sound is relatively slow.
Oh.
Only travels 1,120 feet a second. But the flash of light travels with, well, with the speed of light. 186,000 miles a second. Get it?
Well, I heard what you said, all right, only, well, it doesn't make much sense.
It's scientific. The whole radio business is based on science. Radio is both a science and an art.
186,000 miles.
You're getting Nick snarled up in engineering technicalities, Joe?
No, I'm just trying to get him straightened out.
Yeah.
You invite him up here to a broadcast to learn about radio, so I start by telling him what a VI indicator is.
I see what you mean. Sort of putting the rear axle in front of a horse's bit, yeah? That's a funny laugh. Hey, Joe, do you suppose you and I could explain radio broadcasting in, well, about 26 minutes and 15 seconds?
Oh, sure, my boy. In another 3 minutes, I'll explain the whole theory of evolution.
No kidding aside. I'm serious. We've got a break. The actors have gone to Colby's for sandwiches. We've got just that much time before we go on the air. This boy wants to know about radios, so let's really tell him.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Harmon.
Bert's still out there in the studio at the Hammond organ. Hey, Bert.
Yes, Jeff?
Well, listen, now, when I cue you from here, play something, okay?
Play something?
Yeah, I improvise a theme for radio broadcasting, fella. All right, Nick. Now, we're going to get radio explained to you by radio, complete with music.
Uh-huh.
Is the organ mic patched in, Joe?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cue to organ. Pretty music. Now, folks sitting at their receiving sets, what we call the listening audience, are as vital and important a part of broadcasting as this control panel here. Don't forget that. It gives them a share in the responsibility of radio. Makes a kind of a team, the radio network made up of local stations and the radio listening audience made up of, well, people. I'll show you what I mean in just a minute. As it so happens, exactly 40 years ago today, January 29th, 1907, a man got a patent. A patent on something he called an audion, what you call a radio tube. And the story of how that man, Lee DeForest, came to invent that audion is a story you ought to know if you're going to really understand radio broadcasting. Now, here's where your imagination comes in next. Your imagination as a listener. I'm going to take you back in time 40 years. I guess I'll need some different mood music. Now, hold it, Bert, hold it. Now, Bert, I want a theme on the nostalgic side. Something to set the scene for the year 1906. Okay? See, that's all there is to it, Mac. It's 1906.
That's
here we are.
Good.
People stop in the streets to stare at a newcomer called the horseless carriage. Most of them say it's too noisy and undependable to be a real success. Theodore Roosevelt's in the White House, and in some stores in New York, you can walk in, pay a nickel, and watch a flickering series of figures on a silver screen called movies. Yeah, and lots of people are saying they'll never be a success either. In a laboratory he set up in the Parker Building in New York, a young man named Lee DeForest and carrying on experiments. Now, we're going to go into that laboratory, Nicky, through the magic of radio, plus your imagination as a radio listener. Sound, please. Now, that man over there lighting the Bunsen burner is Lee DeForest. The young fellow helping him is Frank Butler. Listen.
Any notations about the experiments with copper wire, Frank?
Yeah, all entered, Lee. Every size and description of every kind of wire.
And, of course, in my mind, we're on the right track. Heated gases are the basis of a whole new principle of wireless wave detection. Do you realize what it may mean? Close that window, will you?
Huh? What? Window's not open.
Well, there's a draft coming from someplace. Look at this flame flicker. It's too unstable, Frank. It will never work this way.
Well, I don't know how we're going to get an open flame any more stable than one from a Bunsen burner, Lee.
We're not. But if the flame will flutter this way with no visible draft, it's just not a practical device for our purpose. Now's the time to recognize that fact. Here, put it away.
Okay.
If an open flame isn't the answer, what is? The results of our tests so far prove there's something in my theory about heated gases being the basis for better detection of wireless waves.
Of course. Prove it, Lee.
What I said about sending the human voice through the air instead of messages by dots and dashes can be proven too. I know it can.
Yeah. But not using a Bunsen burner to heat the grid wire.
Not using any open flame to heat the grid, Frank. I think we've got to accept that. But if we don't use an open flame, we use enclosed heat.
Enclosed? Yeah. And have you figured out exactly how we're going to enclose a flame so as to be able to...
Not a flame, heat. Heat is what we're after.
Here. Where's that box I was looking through this morning? Heat is what we're after, but not a flame. All right, Lee, I suppose that makes sense somehow, but for the life of me at this moment, I don't see it.
Recognize this, Frank?
Yeah, sure, I recognize it. It's the Christmas tree lamp.
Exactly.
Well, I don't see how an incandescent lamp is... Oh, wait a minute, of course. The filament?
The filament. Frank, we're starting right now to duplicate all our previous experiments. Placing the grid wire next to the heated filament inside the glass.
Oh, yeah, I think I got it, Lee. I think you got it. A Christmas tree lamp and a piece of wire. Well, it sounds crazy, but I think you've hit on it at last.
Maybe, Frank. Maybe not. But at least it's a way of heating without an open flame. And, George, that can't be 11 o'clock.
I hadn't noticed the time, to tell you the truth.
Well, I've kept you off this for a while. Longer than I can admit without a guilt complex.
Perhaps you'd better put off starting the experiments until tomorrow. Oh, no. Put off? Do you think I could sleep tonight knowing you were down here working on something that may... Well, it may...
Something that may revolutionize the entire way of life. No. No, Frank. I don't suppose you could sleep knowing that. I'm sure I couldn't. All right, then. Suppose we get to work.
Well,
Well, Nick, there's a simplified statement of how the Odeon was born. There have been those who called it the mightiest little giant in history. Certainly, DeForest was right when he predicted it would change an entire way of life. Without that tube, we'd never know radio broadcasting as it is today.
Gosh, Mr. Harmon, you were right about that imagination stuff. For a couple of minutes there, I really pictured myself in that laboratory with Mr. DeForest.
Nicky, what did I tell you about the radio tube, the audience that we watched Lee DeForest invent?
Well, that it was a better detector than anything that had been invented up to that time.
A better detector for wireless reception, correct.
Uh-huh.
And wireless means the sending and receiving of sound through the air over great distances. The difference between radio telegraphy or wireless, as it's usually called, and radio broadcasting is that one sends dots and dashes, code signals, and the other sends the human voice instead. A wireless is usually sent point to point from a specific sender to a specific addressee. And broadcasting is general, as its name implies. It's broadcast.
Uh-huh. At the speed of light, 186,000 miles a second. Be sure you make that clear.
Yeah, Joe, I'm coming to it. Sound and light travel in waves, Nicky. A sound wave will rise and swell something like this. While a light wave will move like this. You can hear the difference. Light moves many times faster than sound. And electricity and radio waves move with the speed of light.
Uh-huh.
Now, in other words, suppose you were standing on the stage of your auditorium at school.
I'd rather be here if you don't mind.
Yeah. Well, the point is, by the time your voice had reached the back of the auditorium, a radio wave would carry it halfway around the world.
Because your voice would be traveling on sound waves inside the auditorium, but on radio waves through the air.
Well, what do you know?
Well, what happens to a sound when it enters the microphone is this. It goes first to the studio control booth, then to the master control room, and then out over wires to a station's transmitter.
Which is probably out on some lonely road in the
which
country.
Which is probably out on some lonely road in the country, right. Well, from the transmitter, the sound leaves the wires and goes off into space, riding a radio wave, and finally enters the receiving set in somebody's home.
You mean all that happens every time anybody says boo into a microphone?
Yeah, all that happens. And in the smallest part of a second, Mickey.
Gee, it just doesn't seem possible, does it?
Well, if you're going to start measuring radio by what seems possible, you're in for a busy time, Nick. When you stop to think of what it does, none of it seems possible. Now, just to show you how we can do everything on radio and show you how a mic and radio work, I'm going to take you inside a microphone. Here we go.
Dark in here.
Well, no lights inside a microphone, Nick. Your eyes will get used to it in a minute.
Yeah, I can begin to see. Oh, I hit something here, Mr. Harmon.
Oh, you hit the diaphragm of the mic. Now put out your hand and feel what happens when a sound does that.
It is. It's moving.
Vibrating, Nick. Just the way your eardrum vibrates when a sound strikes. It's the same principle, you see. In the velocity-type microphone, a thin metallic ribbon is mounted between two magnet pole pieces.
Ow! I got a shot.
The vibration of this ribbon generates a voltage at the same frequency as the sound wave that's acting upon it. Hang on now.
Why?
Journey's starting. Here we go.
Where are we now, Mr. Harmon?
Well, we're not far from the mic where we started, Nicky. Back in the studio control room. There's Zimney, and he can't see it.
I feel sort of different some way.
Well, naturally. You've been changed from a sound wave into an electric wave.
And not only that, I feel like I'm shrinking a little.
Hey, that's Joe, the engineer at the control panel. You know what he's doing? He's regulating the volume of sound. That's what makes you feel like that. That's part of the job. That and keeping the whole balance of the program on an even keel. So it'll be heard in the listener's home receiver is exactly right. Now, the next step. This is the master control room, Nick.
Incoming from London. Programs
come in here from all directions.
Leaving Hollywood on line 7.
Put the sounds on the right track.
Leaving New York and carrying
the programs along to every station that is scheduled to carry that particular broadcast. Now, any split second now, a wire will be cleared for us.
A wire? You mean we don't go through the air at all, Mr. Harmon?
Oh, not yet, Nick. Our journey for a while will be through the same kind of wire
that carries telephone communication. Then I don't see why. Hey, Mr. Harmon.
I'm right behind you, Mickey.
Next stop, transmitter.
Gee, traveling over wires is sure the way to move fast, all right. I hardly got started before I...
Ooh. Careful, careful. We're pretty high up, you know.
We are? Say, we are. We're practically up into the clouds.
Well, not quite, Nick. But we are up 550 feet from the ground. This is a radio station transmitter. And that means you're in for another change. From traveling on an electric wave, which you've done up to now, you change to travel on radio waves. You go out on the air at this point. Now, let's see. What time is it?
If I decided to be the sound of a watch ticking, I can tell you.
Almost 5:20. That means you'll travel on a ground wave instead of a sky wave. As a matter of fact, you've already started to do just that.
What has what time it is got to do with what kind of a wave I'm traveling on, Mr. Harmon?
Well, some radio waves follow the course of the ground, Nick. Others shoot off into the sky and are lost in the daytime.
In the daytime?
At night, there's a sort of a cloud of electrical particles that forms about 70 miles above the Earth. This cloud stops the sky waves from slipping off into space. Scientists call the cloud the ionosphere because the electrical particles that make it up are ions.
You mean radio waves hit the cloud, the ionosphere, and bounce back down toward the ground again?
At night, yes. That's why you can get distant stations at night that you can't get during the day when the ionosphere doesn't stop the sky waves.
Well, what do you know? Look, Mr. Harmon.
Yes, Nick?
I'm enjoying being a sound and traveling on a radio wave and all. But we've been gone quite a while, and I'd hate to miss the program.
Oh, don't worry. We won't miss it, Nick. Anyhow, we haven't been gone quite a while. Everything that's happened to us has only taken a fraction of a second, remember. We've been moving with the speed of light. And that means we can go around the world 7 times in a second.
Yes.
By the way, that transmitter we just left does one more thing that's important. It magnifies you.
The transmitter magnifies me?
You're a sound, remember. And a 50,000-watt transmitter, like the one we stopped at, magnifies sound 10 million times. Makes the program coming over the wire strong enough to be heard a long way from the transmitter itself.
Magnifies it 10 million times. That doesn't seem possible.
Now look.
Look, an aerial on top of the house. I've got one of those rigged up at my own house.
Well, that aerial, whether it's on top of a house or enclosed in a receiving set, picks up radio waves from the air and carries them into the listener's receiving set, where they're magnified 1 million times.
1 million?
Something called the radio amplifier that's built into the receiving set does that. From the amplifier, the sound goes to the detector, then to the audio amplifier, and finally, it enters into the loudspeaker on its radio wave.
Say, I feel sort of funny. It's different, I mean.
Well, of course you do.
I mean, I feel like I did when we started out back in the broadcasting studio.
Well, that's because the loudspeaker changes your electric wave back into a sound wave.
You may consider yourself tuned in, Mickey.
Gee, that was quite an experience, Mr. Harmon.
Well, you see what radio plus a little imagination can do, Nick. You know, for a few minutes, I even believed you were a sound being broadcast. That's a fact.
It was swell, Mr. Harmon. Say, there's just one thing.
Oh, he's not satisfied. Now he'd like a trip to the moon.
No, not at all. I'm satisfied, really. Only, well, when I get home, Dad's going to ask me a whole flock of questions.
Well, then you'll tell him how sound waves become radio waves and off into space to go around the world and almost nothing flat.
Well, yes, I think I can tell him about all that, all right, but you see, he's going to say that's only part of the whole picture. You see, my dad's a great one to want to know all the sides of a question, Mr. Harmon.
Well, that's a good habit to practice, Nicky. And he'll be right, of course. You know, there is more to radio broadcasting than he's explained so far.
Well, how much time have we got before we go on the air, Joe? About 7 minutes?
Let's see. No, 5.
Come on, Nicky.
Where are we going, Mr. Harmon?
On a little tour, Nicky.
Mr.
this studio, it's a lot bigger than the one we just left, Mr. Harmon.
It's Studio 22, Nick.
Boy, it sure is big. Tell me, what kind of shows do they do here?
Programs where audiences are admitted or where we use a full orchestra along with a dramatic cast.
Uh-huh.
Nick, do you know how many radio stations there are in the United States?
Well, I suppose a couple of hundred.
On January 1st, there were 1,579.
You know, Nick, people in this country spend more time listening to radio programs than they do at anything. Well, except working and sleeping. That gives you an idea how much of a factor radio broadcasting is in our everyday lives.
Sure does, Mr. Harmon. You know, Dad would rather stay home and listen to his favorite radio programs than go out lots of times.
The last check, Nick, showed that there were more radios in the country than automobiles or telephones. Well, here we are again. Now, before we go in, you have a little better idea now of what goes on in making a radio program, Nick?
I sure have, Mr. Harmon.
Well, it's a pretty big shop for Radio Network Headquarters. And it has to be. For it not only sends entertainment out over the air, but provides broadcasts that inform and even instruct. You ever hear of one of President Roosevelt's fireside chats?
Oh, sure I have. It was almost as if he were right in the same room talking with me.
Well, that's radio, Nick. So are big news events. There are all kinds of programs. Now, the one we're doing, the CBS School of the Air, its programs are educational. And we've been doing them for 17 years now.
Gee.
Well, in different forms, of course. You know, Nick, those programs are heard by a lot of different kinds of people in different places.
And some schools listen, don't they?
Yes, and people in their homes. 100 radio stations carry the programs in the United States and 8 in Canada.
Canada?
Gee. Well, that isn't all. Many of the programs are beamed overseas by the State Department and the Armed Forces Radio Service and 400 Army hospitals get them.
Hey, come on. Come on. We just got a minute and a half left before we go on the air.
Okay, let's get into the control room.
Jeff.
Yeah?
Sound man signaling it.
Okay. Yeah, Henry?
I got a record for the yacht that doesn't have so many highs.
Good. Let's hear it. That's swell, Henry. That one doesn't sound like a motorboat. We'll buy it.
Okay.
System, 30 seconds.
30 seconds, everyone. Quiet, please. Yes, Nick, we've come a long way from that first Audion tube DeForest patented exactly 40 years ago today. That wasn't much more than a whisper then. But it's a thundering voice now heard round the world. Yet there's still a long road ahead for radio broadcasting.
5 seconds.
As radio explores that road,
four,
it will do so as an instrument of the people.
Two.
Let's see. First, choose the news.
One. Take it.
You have been listening to your Science Magazine of the Air, presented by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Today's program, Listening In, was written by William Kendall Clark. The production was under the direction of John Becker, with music by Albert Berman. For the remaining time, we invite you to listen to the fugue in A-flat minor by Brahms. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.